Okay. So Exodus 2, verses 11 to 25, just continuing this amazing story, this wonderful adventure that obviously begins and ends in the thoughts of God. Now, whatever happened in that jump forward as we've just read it today, because it does jump forward. Last week we looked at and saw that Moses was a baby, and we talked about that. And now he's, you know, it would seem that he's a full-grown man. About 40 years of age, most people would say. And we recognise that God had done something in Moses' heart. It began a work there. There was something about it. We see that when Moses identifies with the Israelites rather than identifying with the house of Egypt, which is where he's been part of the family of Pharaoh for this time. And it says, now when Moses, it came to pass in those days as Moses was grown, that he went out to his brothers, and he looked at their burdens, and he saw the Egyptian beating the Hebrew, one of his brethren. So obviously God has put something there, and he is identifying with them. And we see that loyalty in what he says, and even to a certain extent in his misplaced actions. But whilst his compassion is really commendable, his actions were not. Whichever way you look at it, Moses committed murder. I was saying to Angela this morning, I wonder when we get down to Moses receiving the Ten Commandments, when he's walking back down that mountain to deliver them to the people, and he's reading them, yep, I'm all right on that one. Thou shalt commit murder. Whoa. We'll see in a couple of weeks what Moses thought when he read that one. And he knew he was wrong, because it said he looked this way and that way. You can imagine it, can't you? He killed the bloke, and then he looked around to see. It's just like you when you drive through a red light. The first thing you do is think, whoa, anybody see me? Something like that. For Jordan, it's when he comes round to our house and starts looking in the cupboards, and then he finds these nice dates that we buy from time to time. Have you ever tried those, what they're called, Angelos? Yeah, those big chunky dates. And Jordan looks in our cupboard and he sees them, and he looks this way and that way, and he starts taking them. And not only that, he buried the body in the sand. He's trying to cover up after himself. Now, in Acts 7, which says a bit about the situation of Moses, and we read about it in a little bit in Hebrews 11 as well, but Stephen says, it's recorded in Acts 7, he supposed that his brethren would understand, but they didn't. They said, who's made you a judge over us? Who's made you king over us and ruler over us? And they didn't at that time acknowledge it at all. And neither did Pharaoh. Pharaoh was not happy. And he said that he set his face to kill Moses. I guess at this stage, Moses had a passion for his people. He had a passion to do God's will. I'm certain of that. But it wasn't established in humility or the wisdom of God. He maybe had the wisdom of Egypt there, because he'd have been taught and trained in all the things that was familiar to the Egyptians, but his wisdom was not yet properly coming from God. And it wasn't God's timing. Let me tell you, God's timing is always perfect. It says in Scripture, in the fullness of the times, God sent forth his son, born of a woman. In the fullness, in God's perfect timing. And everything that happens in our lives is in God's perfect timing. We may not see that straight away, may not happen in the way that we would like it to happen, but nevertheless, we have to believe, if we put in our faith and trust in God, that everything happens to us in God's perfect timing. And so will the outcome of those things that you're immediately thinking about now. So Moses, he took off to Midian. It doesn't mean much to us now. As I understand it, it's on what is in modern days called the Gulf of Aqaba. Sounds great, doesn't it? Sounds more like something out of Aladdin or something like that, really. But actually, you've got this body of water that comes in out of the main sea. And on one side is Egypt, if you look at the map. And the other side, probably what we call Saudi Arabia and that kind of region. So obviously warm and desert. And Moses took off there. And it says he sat down by a well. Moses fled from the face of Pharaoh and dwelt in the land of Midian, and he sat down by a well. In a warm and desolate place, it's a good place to sit. As I thought about it, my mind started to wander, and as it often can do, and I'm sure that you notice that from time to time. But I thought, he could have been sat by a well in Castleford, for all I know. Because here he is, he's sat by this well, he's wanting to get a drink. You could say it was like a bar in a modern day setting. And up comes these seven young ladies, actually, seem quite nice. And he's sat there at the bar, he's got his drink, and the ladies fill there. And then it says that these shepherds of Midian came up and basically bullied them out the way. Well, if you've ever been to Castleford on a weekend, you'll see that. All the men take steroids, and they all walk like this. And they've got all these muscles out there. I don't know whether they're actually full of water, because I have actually tried lifting things with some of these blokes before, and they're not as strong as what the muscles seem. But anyway, Moses is up for it, and his military training must really kick in or serve him well. And he's up for a fight. So he clears these shepherds off. There's obviously more of them than him. And yet he sets them on his way. And he makes sure that the girls get their water for themselves and the water for the camels as well. So there's something of his compassion and his love for people that is coming out again then. And it's very interesting, I think, to observe the situation, because maybe the girls have got their eyes on him. If they live in a land where all the men are muppets who are just pumped up on steroids and want to bully the women all over the place, a bloke who he's looked after himself, he's lived in Pharaoh's palace, he's been eating good food, he's in good shape, he can handle himself, he's kind. Whoa, what kind of a man? That's just the kind of man that every kind of woman wants, isn't it? Whoa. I would say to you all, and whoever's listening on tape as well this morning, there are a lot of very nice young women in the church generally, and they are looking to some of you young men to be men of God. You are the future husbands to wonderful ladies, young women in the church, even as Moses was being sized up and was sized up by the priest of Midian to be a husband for his daughter. And all these things you should be displaying, you know, faithfulness, saying what you want to say, being kind, being compassionate to other people. And Moses was. And yet, I guess Moses is sat there really, and he's as sick as the proverbial parrot. Because his best start to saving God's people, as up to now, it's all gone pear-shaped, hasn't it? It's all gone absolutely wrong. And there is yet a lot to respect about Moses. You know, he cared for God's people. He was compassionate. He was courageous. He defended the weak. But all of this time, God was training Moses. He was training him up. And Moses had a lot to learn. I think he was probably something like Joseph, one of the patriarchs who went before him. Joseph had this amazing gift. God had his hand on him. He had something absolutely wonderful and special for him to do. And yet he needed some training. He was as arrogant as they come. He had this coat of many colours and he loved to ponce about in it. And God's probably thought to himself, I just need to, you know, rub some edges off this guy before he actually fulfills the purposes that I have in him. I can see that he's done that with me. I can see that he's done that with some of us. And some people, I can also see, have not listened to a word of it, and they're just carrying on doing exactly the same thing that they've been doing for years. But, you know, Joseph, even when he got this place in the house of the highest person in the land, he still ended up in jail. And you could say, well, it wasn't really his fault, was it? He was accused of something that he never did. But God still used that, because when he met the butcher, the baker, and the candlestick maker and started deciphering their dreams and they were released, he said to them when they were leaving, don't forget me. Don't forget me. When the king asks you, tell him about me. And eventually, when God had rubbed some edges off him, and it's the same thing with Moses. He had a big learning curve to look at. And in Midian, I think that Moses learned how to be a husband. How to love, how to care for and serve and lead his wife. Now you may think, that's pretty basic to lead the people of Israel. Listen, it says, doesn't it, in the New Testament, if a man can't even lead his family, how is he going to lead the church of God? And I've seen many men come in and out of this church, and they all want to be in positions of honour. They all want to be this, and they all want to be that, and some of them can't even look after their wives. And so when I tell them they've got a bit to go, you can tell that they're not here anymore. They've set this off to the church down the road where they might not recognise and they can get away with and do what they want. But not here, because we stick to what God says in his word as much as we obviously can. I'm sure he had some training as well in instructing his children. He also had to work hard as a shepherd in Midian. Wasn't kicking back on some lounge in a palace in Egypt, you know, with women scantily clad feeding him grapes every 5 minutes, which may seem like a dream to some of you, but God's got something better than that for you. And he became a shepherd, literally a shepherd, so he could shepherd his people. So all these things, they all helped him to identify with suffering people a lot better than he would have been if he'd have stayed in a palace. How do you identify with suffering people who are meant to do hard labour and work hard all day long in the heat of the sun when you're, you know, living the dream in a palace somewhere? So God had to get him out of there. And God amazingly does. God always gets us to the place where he wants us to be. More than that, very interestingly, I don't know about you, but in my Bible, if you just look across the page, God starts to speak to Moses. Pete, I'm sure, will tackle this next week. About the plans that he has for him. And actually God says, when you bring my people out of Egypt, bring them to this place here. It's amazing. So Moses doesn't know why he's in Midian. He's thinking, what am I doing in a desolate place like this? I've just come out of the palaces of Egypt and now I'm here. My dream seems to have died. Everything's going pear-shaped. No people of God round here. I've left them all behind. They're still toiling. The situation's still the same. What am I doing in Midian? And then all of a sudden, it all starts to take shape. God says, when you bring the people out of Egypt, bring them to this place. And so as a shepherd, he knew where all the wells were. He knew how to get water in the wilderness. He knew the area where they could hide away, where they could not be found out. All these different places. He knew all the terrain. God was preparing him. It's absolutely amazing as it unfolds. But listen, that's all very well. I'm going to say in a moment that, listen, as amazing as Moses is, and I love the guy, as a leader of a church, I love to read the story of Moses, a man, just a servant at heart, a man who cared for and wanted to, you know, lead his people. A man who wanted to lead people out of slavery. And then at the end, he didn't even get the reward. I mean, he just went round with these moaning bunch of rambunctious people, you know, year after year after year, and cared for them till the end and didn't get to the goal that was set before him. I just think, what a man. But it's not enough just to talk about Moses. I want to tell you, and I'm going to repeat this week by week, the central character of Exodus is not Moses. The central character of Exodus is God. And God is on our case. Now, I dare say I'm bringing this right back home now. I'm bringing this right back into our own situation and circumstances. Some of you today, you probably feel that you could be sat by a well in Midian. Where you are now in your situation and circumstances, it's maybe not where you thought you would be now. Maybe life has not followed the plan that you dreamt of 5 years ago, 10 years ago, 15 years ago, or whatever it was. And maybe your dreams have been broken down. And so you end up thinking, like Moses, what is God doing? And it's a struggle for you in this season of your life. But listen, there's always hope in God. God always has the answer. God was working in Moses' life, is working in your life, in that place of Midian, wherever it is. Moses didn't understand it at the time. And maybe you're not understanding, what is God up to at this time? I just cannot see the end of things. But let me tell you, God has a plan. And God knows you in exactly the same way as he knew Moses. You are an individual person who he knows and loves. He's already brought you out of the slavery that we sang about this morning. There is now, therefore, no condemnation for those who are in Christ Jesus, who live according to his word. God has got a plan. And often, it's not while you look back on these difficult times that you'll find the purposes of God. That's what God wants you to understand at this moment. For Moses, he goes from privilege in a palace in the world's greatest nation known to them at the time to absolutely nothing in the twinkling of an eye. It's like, whoa. And at the end of verse 22, there doesn't seem to be much hope. Moses was content to live with obviously the girl's father, Jethro, Reuel, as he's called at the moment. And he marries his daughter. He has a son. And it says she bore him a son, and he called his name Gershom. Is anybody here this morning called Gershom? No? Whoa, you should be so lucky. It's not a name that's familiar or popular, is it, nowadays? But it actually means, I have been a stranger in a foreign land. And there's a weightiness about it. I mean, fancy Moses passing it on to his son. We try not to do those kind of, we try to cut things off that are negative from previous generations, not add them to it. But that's where he was at the time. And everything seemed to be very, very bleak. And then when we get to verse 23, it doesn't immediately change. Now, it happened in the process of time that the king of Egypt died. And the children of Israel groaned because of their bondage. So the previous king died, but the one who took over from him just kept doing exactly the same things. Very, very difficult. And the people groaned and they cried out, but their cry came up to God because of their bondage. Let me just tell you, if you are in this place where everything looks bleak, this place where you feel as if this is not where I wanted to be 5 years ago, this is not what I imagined 10 years ago, this is not what I imagined when I got married, this is not what I imagined when I started this job, this is not what I imagined when I had kids. Listen, everything is about to change. And I had a sense, actually, that God was saying that to us, that he wanted me to say that to you this morning. Not just as some kind of false hope from a pulpit with no meaning. I literally had a sense that God is saying a time is very near when all that will change. Just like in this excerpt from Exodus. A time is coming when it's going to change. And the people's cry came to God. It's the first recorded cry for help. And God answers them straight away. Why didn't they do it before? Absolutely amazing. Listen, if you find yourself in a position where your only hope is God, let me tell you this morning, you have every reason to hope. Because God is the answer. Philip Ryken, an American pastor and author, I guess, said this: sooner or later, every Christian finds themselves in a situation where the only thing to do is to cry out to God. So for the people of God, everything is about to change. And for you, please put that mindset on, because I really feel as if that is going to happen. And then in verses 24 and 25, God takes center stage. Wonderful. These verses remind us that actually the only true, reliable object of hope is God. And I want to tell you can even tell that to your friends who don't know him. You've got a message, you've got a testimony, you've got your own story where you came out of darkness into his glorious light. That's right, Russell, into light. It's amazing. Listen to Jacob's story. We often mention that. He was in darkness. We saw him in darkness. Listen, don't look at Jacob. I was in darkness. A great darkness. And so we have this central character. The hero of Exodus is God, not Moses. We need to get that mindset as we work through it. And God heard the groaning, and it says, God remembered his covenant with Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. Do you know when those covenants were made? Hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of years before. Do you know when Moses was born and placed in that basket and his mother had a promise? She saw that he was beautiful, but she saw more than that. Somewhere she understood, like Mary when she held these things in her heart, somehow she knew that he would be a great man of God in his day. Listen, he was 40 when he left Egypt. They reckon he was 80 when God sent him back to do the stuff. So he got two 40-year periods, and one of them was a false start. That sometimes puts our waiting in perspective. I mean, I struggle to wait for the traffic lights to change, never mind anything else. 40 years. Some of you have promises on your life that God has spoken over you. And you're starting to think, where is that? Where is that promise? So Moses is in exile. He's looking after a few sheep in the back of beyond. And his vision seems to have all but gone. But God. So the purpose of Exodus is to help us see and grow in our relationship to God. I want to ask you a question just before we finish. Who are your groans going up to God for? Who are your groans going up to God for? Who are you burdened for? It may be for yourself. And I want to tell you, that is absolutely okay. If you've identified with all that feeling like you're sat by a well in Midian, you know, well, God recognizes that and God hears your cry as well. It may be that, you know, your groans are going up for somebody else or for some kind of loss in your life. And so it's okay to ask in our circumstances, and I want to encourage you, and I want to say with every confidence that God hears your groans. But surely, surely, and I really say this guardedly, because I know for me that I keep having to address this in my life, your pain is also to see someone else or some other group of people set free. For Moses, it was a group of people. It became a nation of people. And so I want to ask you, do we notice other people's burdens? I'm sure that some of you do. Some of you are working with people where every day your heart is going out to people. God sees that. And we don't want to have, as Angela would say, an emotional disconnect. Or worse than that, we never think about anybody who's worse off than us. We never think about anybody else, really. What about the women of Reflect that Linda spoke to us about at our prayer meeting last week? Women who've had loss in pregnancy or are facing situations where they're having to make hideous decisions that they don't really want to make, but third parties and outside interests are pressing them and forcing them to do something which will just bring devastation to their life, you know, in years to come. And then when somehow they feel as if they couldn't be wrung out any longer, any more, or any worse, out of desperation, they look for people like Linda who can give them hope. And Linda was sharing in Reflect that we are absolutely maxed out with women from this town who are coming and having deep and meaningful questions about pregnancy loss and pregnancy issues. Linda's got three clients already. Another lady who works with our centre in Selby, who lives actually some way away now, but she's got three clients from Selby, and Linda said she's having to start a waiting list. But I want to tell you this hope, because next month, in York, ladies and men are going to get trained up to counsel people, women who are going through these kind of things. And it is increasing in our society, day upon day, week after week, month after month, year after year. And we can't point the finger and say Christians don't do that, because not everybody starts out as a Christian. People have terrible things happen to them before they ever become Christians. And they need people like us who have got a message of hope for them. They are definitely sat by a well in Midian, but they don't know it. And so could you, do you have enough time to train to help women in this town? And maybe if you think, I'm just not good at relating to people, I couldn't be a counsellor. Can you make a cup of tea? Because when these ladies come into this building, looking around them probably, making sure that nobody's looking, make sure that nobody knows what I'm going for, because they do come in like that often. You could be there to greet them at the door and tell them that there's hope and make them feel good about themselves for the first time maybe in years. Make them a cup of tea and get Linda to talk to them. But we can't sit back and not think of situations like this. What about the hundreds of children in the 11 schools that we work in that go to school without a meal and go to school without a uniform and go to school without parents seeing them off or picking them up? And our Christmas experience, that whole event, is geared up so that we can build relationships with local schools, so that we might have a place amongst them to do assemblies, to take lessons, and even to mentor some of these young children who are so smashed up, even at primary school. And we can go in and mentor them one-to-one. And at 5 or 6 years old, can you imagine a child sat by a well in Midian? Whoa! And if you're 18 and you know God, you could mentor one of those children. We'll get you some training. There's any amount of children. When we went in with four people, we said we've got four people who are prepared to give an hour a week. I don't know how to shout or to be embarrassed. Four people, and you know what the school said? Oh my word, how are we going to pick four? How are we going to pick four? Out of hundreds in one school. We cannot sit back and do nothing, even if it is thinking about our own problems. What about the unsaved in Selby? Where's the evangelists amongst you? What about people coming to this cafe which we've just started on a Tuesday morning? People, you know, who are really down because of various situations and circumstances. Maybe something about their health that is not too good. Maybe things have just got too much and they're in a terribly depressed state or something like that. We can tell people there's hope. People who care for you, people who love you, people who can give you a message of hope are waiting for you to walk through the door. I wonder for all these people, for these women of Reflect, for these small children at school, I wonder, do they think daily to themselves, is God aware of my situation? Does he care? Does God care? How are they going to get to know unless we tell them? Can we assure them that they can be certain that God's heart and God's intention is towards them? That God is a God who loves them? Let me tell you, verse 24. God heard their groans. God remembered his covenant. God saw their circumstances. And God knew their situation. And God put an amazing plan into action. But somebody has got to put their hand to the grindstone and somebody has got to tell them. How will they know unless somebody sends them? Unless somebody tells them? How can we tell them unless somebody goes? And he remembers the promises given to you in Christ. If you are in Midian this morning, you have hope. Because you're sat here and you just need to be reminded that God is a God of hope. That God is a God of compassion. That God is a God who brings people out of darkness into light. But if you don't know that, how are you ever going to find hope where there seems to be no hope? And let me assure you that God's timing in your life this morning, God's timing in your life is perfect to fulfill his promises and his purposes with you. Listen, I want to tell you, because we're going to break bread now for the last bit of our time together. Listen, the only thing that God forgets about you is your sin. The only thing that God forgets is your sin. All those things. For those women coming in to see Linda at Reflect, they're probably thinking, I am the most hideous person. I have failed. I have come up short, and many of them do. I'm not saying all of them, but many of them do. If you could tell them that the only thing that God remembers from your life, the only thing, sorry, that God forgets about your life is your sin. Whoa! How would that come as an amazing shaft of light into their life? But somebody has got to tell them. Somebody has got to care. Somebody has got to do it. We've got to come out of our palaces of comfort and get into the places that God has got for us. And if you're already out there in the wilderness, let me tell you, in some ways, bizarre as it seems, if you believe in God, there are a lot worse places that you could be, because God is a God of hope, and God knows exactly where you're at, and he is going to act for you. And it's coming soon. I believe that. Whoa, okay. We're going to turn now. That is the end of the preach. I want to share with you these amazing words. Sonia spoke about forgiveness before I stood up to preach this morning. I'm just going to end the tape now because we've finished there.